Section number 1127, Rule 8.
Mr. J.F. Bell, Reel 8. You're talking about your journey home, Mr. Bell. Would you like to go on with that story?
Yes, well, as I say, like, we went on board drill and I was a bit put out, really. Lined up in front of us on board drill, there were around about 250 women and kids who were evacuees from Singapore. And the thought passed through my mind, I hope nothing happens. You know, women and kids. And we got down to Cape Town. We had to steam outside for a day. Anyway, we got left Cape Town.
Was this in convoy now? We were in a convoy.
I'll just come to that. No convoy, no escort, just on our own. And there was a few Dems on, you know, this... had a couple of guns aboard. And I thought to myself, well, what the hell's going on here? No convoy, I mean, 1942. No escort, no nothing. And the funny thing is, we never saw nothing till we got about where? Off Freetown. I'm saying about Freetown. And I was lying at about 5 o'clock in the morning, lying in my bunk, and bang, I thought, oh Christ, no, this is it. You know, middle of the Atlantic, didn't know where we were. So anyway, the alarm bells went, we all went up to all board stations, and just come on dawn, and we looked. There was three ships out there, well, corvettes they were, we found out, like, ours. And this skipper, who must have been the commodore of the three, you know, come alongside, and he raised and joined. Why didn't you bloody well stop, he said, to this Dutchman. He said, I thought it was an air raid, he must have sent a star shell up, sir. Then when he didn't slow down, he sent a bloody shot across his bow. And that was the only thing we saw. We never saw nothing else. And I couldn't tell you how long the journey took. You know what I mean? It seemed as though we were safe for months.
What were conditions like on board?
Oh, we were all right. Yeah, the grub was all right and everything, you know. I mean, they didn't bother you, you know what I mean? A bit of a lab, you'd get a book to read or go down and have a game of dominoes or cards with the lads, you know. But... the funny thing is, that's the only thing we saw. And when you worked it out, like, when you really looked later on, you say, well, how the hell did we do it? We were right from Durban to Liverpool, and we never saw a bloody scratch, apart from these three corvettes. Of course, they could have been somewhere else. But anyway, we got to Liverpool, and I looked. It would be in back end of June or early July. I looked. It was a day like today, miserable, fret rain, you know. And all we saw was a bobby on the bloody dockhead. Anyway, we gets alongside, the tides is up. Customs came aboard, they didn't bother as much. The civilians went off, the RAF people went off, the Navy went off, all our buses, our lorries there. We still stood there, and a voice from the bottom shouted on the quayside, who are you lot? I don't know nothing about you lot. And somebody shouted down, well, we're the bloke from Oraibi Hospital, South Africa. Don't know nothing about you, you'll have to wait till I find out. So we were stuck there for another 3 bloody hours till I found somewhere to send us. So, anyway, the fixed us up, they sent us to lorries and sent us up to Ormskirk. It was an hospital that was just opening out. I believe it was a college they were converting. And we gets in there. We're about something to bloody eat. Well, we'll see what we can do. We've got a bit of bacon and beans or some bloody thing and a bit of bread, a cup of tea. Anyway, we looked. Now we come home in khaki. They made us take our khaki off and put hospital blues on. So I said to this staff sergeant, or whatever they were in the... I'm forgetting what the ranks are in the medical corps now. I said, hey. I said, I've been abroad 7.5 years. What about some bloody leave? He said, oh, no. He said, no, you'll have to wait till your medical category regrading and everything. So we were stuck there. So there was three of us. We said, right, we'll go down the town. The first thing you think about, pint of beer in an English pub. He goes down, hospital blows, within his pub. The manager said, I'm sorry, I can't serve you. He said, I can't serve anybody in hospital blows. And I said, then what, after 7.5 bastard years, I said, you come back here, and that's the first thing you get. And he looked at me, he said, where have you come from? I said, oh, we just come back from the Middle East, the three of us. Well, he said, go in the back room there. And we went in the back room, he said, there you are. He said, I'll give you all a pint of peace, but he said, can't serve you in blues. You give us a pint of peace. That was the greeting we got. There's no bloody bands on the quayside waiting for us when we come home.
Did he not explain why he wouldn't serve you in hospital blues?
Well, them the orders.
Just, that was an order that was given to
that
the
that was an order
publicans.
To all the whole the town, you see. Anybody in hospital blues, you could not serve them. I could understand that.
As you came in, how did you feel? You'd been away 7.5 years and seen some action and had a nasty wound. What was your feelings coming into Liverpool?
Well, if it said right over, turn and going back again, I wouldn't have been sorry. You know, the weather and every bloody thing. And, you know, I looked and I thought everything was drab. Well, you could understand it would be. And we get to this bloody hospital and they didn't help any. You know, they just didn't give a bugger where you'd come from, what you'd done, nothing. Anyway... The next thing that happened, we went on a medical board. And I always remember this MO saying to me, how are you doing now? I said, oh, not too bad. He said, do you have any trouble with your knee? I said, no, not really. Oh, all right. And then he said, right, well, you can go. Didn't say no. The next thing I knew, I graded from downgraded to B7. I thought, oh, well, that's all right. So I said to them, you know, they said, right, we're going to send you away now. There was a lad there from Chester.
Did you know what the grading system was?
No, I didn't. Not
did
really.
B7.
Just graded down to B7, which, as far as I can make out, meant that you couldn't march a lot and all this sort of thing.
They'd not actually examined you, had they?
Oh, yeah. Medical exam, yeah. Huh. This is what they did for grading, you see. And he said, right, leave. Said, about bloody time, I know, we're all... There was a lad there from Chester. Well, he reckons he could have gone home in an hour. It's not far from Ormskirk, not so far from Liverpool, in that area. They wouldn't let him go. They wouldn't give him a 24-hour pass to go home. They said, you'll wait till they would discharge him, you see, he lost his arm.
Had they informed your parents when you got to England, had they informed them that you were there?
No.
So this time they didn't know where you were?
The only time they informed them, they sent them a telegram, I have a bugger in my pocket somewhere, to tell them I'd been wounded with any further news. Well, I didn't think they sent them. I only thought they sent them, you see, because when the old lady got it, she didn't open it. She waited till the old man come home. And it just said he'd been wounded. And any further news, they would let them know, you see. Well, I only thought they only sent them when you got killed. Of course, they were terrified to death because I had two cousins killed earlier on. But anyway, I said, leave. I said, hey, I said, I've been abroad 7.5 years. How much leave I'm getting? He said, I don't care where you've been. They said, all you're getting is 10 days disembarkation leave. I said, that's all you're getting. I said, and what about money like? He said, you'll get your 10 days pay and your 10 days rations. I said, hey, I've been in hospital 6 bloody months. I said, on half pay. He said, I don't care. He said, you'll have to wait till that comes from Jerusalem or some bloody where. Or, you know, like from the pay office in Jerusalem. He said, all I've got is your AB64. And he wouldn't give us an out. No, I said, all right. Oh, I said, well, am I on? He said, that's all you're getting. I said, and where have I got to go to when I get there? He said, Brandsbeth. I said, where the hell's that? He said, don't ask me. I don't know. So anyway, I sent the old woman a telegram. I said, well, I'd better warn them. I said, We won't be there sometime, you know. Couldn't tell them when. We got down to Liverpool and Comical, three of us. Right, we're going to have a couple of pints. The three of us, we were all going to Leeds and then parting away from Merley. Had about 4 or 5 pints. We get on this bloody train. It wasn't a corridor train. There was no toilet on. There was three of us sitting there and two old dears in the corner. And of course, we got about halfway to Leeds and we, you know. So this old dear said, pull the window down, she said, and go on, I know what you want. We didn't know. Two old dears, they didn't give a booger. She said, looks like you've just come back. If Brown enough, have you just come back? We said, yes. She said, where from? I said, oh, the Middle East. Oh. Yeah, go on. But anyway, we changed at Leeds. We had to go over. I'm forgetting where the other two lads went now, but we had to change from one station to the other. And gets into Downton and gets into West Hartlepool here about what? 9:45 or something like that. Me, I said to the porter, I don't know whether you know much about this area. I said, hey, what time's the next autocar? And he looked at me, he said, what? He said, where the hell you been? I said, I've been abroad. He said, I haven't been running for the last 5 years. Well, I said, how am I going to get the outside? Well, he said, you dash out now, you might get a bus. And I thought to myself, oh, well. He said, if you haven't, you'll have to wait till the lasses from Aincliffe come. They were on the ammunition workers then, the lasses. See, the total tension. And they used to run through there. But anyway, I got to the door, and the old man stood there. Half cut. We went to get a taxi. He couldn't get a taxi for Matt Lewis taking our bags home. He started to raise the joint down and said, oh, shut up. And it was raining. Then we went out and there was a bus come down. He waved it down and it was a works bus. But he knew the conductor. She said, what's the matter, Tommy? He said, well, the lad just come home. I want to get home. She said, well, I can only take as far as Truston Bridge up and down there. And we lived right down the bottom of the headland then. So that'll do us. Not far to walk from there, like. So it must have been pretty nigh midnight when I got in. Of course, so, you know, you got over it. And I think myself, like, you know, when I look back, it was probably the most boring 10 days I ever had. I mean, everybody had been called up. I was working. I was just wandering around the bloody town on my own, you know. I was glad to get back. See, all them lads I knew had all been either called up or they were working all the day, half the night.
You'd been away for 7.5 years, of course.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
So it was a pretty boring time.
You know, you'd lost track of everybody. You were that used to living, you know, with your mates, with, you know, the regiment, that, you know... people were talking to you, and half the time you didn't know what the hell they were talking about, see? They were talking about things that happened, you know, you didn't know. So anyway, I said to me, right, Bransford. I remember it was August Bank Holiday Monday when I went back.
42.
Gets to Durham, and the bloke said, oh, get that bus, crew bus, or whatever, well, Wellington bus, get on there. He said, and you'll see where the camp is, get off. So I gets off, goes to guard room. Of course, I had no rifle, no equipment, you know. Who are you? Oh, I said, I've got a report here. I don't know nothing about it. Well, if you go over that square there, there's some building there. See the Sergeant Major over there? And I goes over and bumps into him. I looked, and he looked at me. I knew him as a Lance Corporal in the 2nd Battalion in India, like, what, 7 years before. He said, what the hell are you doing here? Well, I said, I've just come back from the Middle East. He said, what are you doing here? I said, I don't know, I've been to a report here. And he said, well, go in there and find a bed and I'll see what I can do. So he come back the next day, he said, I've got a good job for you. I said, oh, I have heard that bloody tale before, not a good job. Oh, he said, I'm not kidding. He said, go to PRI. I said, where the hell is he? He said, go over there, and them officers there, you'll see his office. So I walked in there, Major Fulton out the Duke of Wellington's, but his clerk, I knew that bugger in India. You know, he sort of knew. Eh? And he said to me, what have you been sent there? I said, I don't know, I've just been told to come and report to you. He said, oh, yes. I still had a Lance Corporal stripe up mine. I never took it down. Whether I should have done that, I don't know. He said, go over there and take charge of the nappy. Well, the nappy in Bransford, there was two big nappies. I think it was 1, 2, 4 or 5 ATS lasses and a couple of blokes. Well, anyway, I goes over and takes on. And that was it. So, later on, it'd be what? Back in the 44, sent for me. Sorry, I've got to post you. Well, in the meantime, I forget about it. I'd been up twice to get returned to duty. I was getting fed up, you know. And then, coming orders, anybody that had any sea experience, they wanted people for the landing, not landing craft, for the supply ones. So I put my name down. I never heard a thing about it. Whether they ever sent it in or not, I don't know. But anyway, he sent for me, he said, post it. I said, all right. Righto, fair enough. I went down to Company HQ, down to Castle, where the Company HQ was. He said, there's a truck there. He said, now go up the Ferry Hill and find yourself civvy billets. I looked at him, I wonder what the bloody hell's going on. I said, how the hell am I going to find civvy billets? Well, he said, best thing to do, go in the police station. I said, anyway, what am I going to do? He said, you're range warden at Kirk Merrington. And I had a 50 yards range there, and it was about 3 miles from the camp. So what these young lads had to do was to march that 3 miles, get down, fire the 5 rounds, 10 rounds, or whatever that to fire, then march back to the camp in an hour and a half or 2 hours, you know, whatever the time was, see? So anyway, I goes there and they sent me down to Mrs. Rothery. And she said, yes, but no, be all right. Well, she had two lads, like, and she was very, very good to us. You know, she couldn't do enough for us. And I stopped there till what? After VE Day, I was there when VE Day came. So I goes down to said, right, back to barracks, right, and said goodbye to her. I kept in touch with her, right, and get back to barracks. Next thing I knew, right, you're posted. I said, where to this time? Hartlepool. I said, all right, where? A golf course. Do you know where it is? I said, I think so. So I come through here, just through the arch there, you know the arch, it's just over there. Big wooden building. For me and another four blokes. And you did know when you come, all you did was this bloody, like information things, you know, sort of getting you ready for civvy street, you know. I forget, I had a name for it, but I'm forgetting the name now. We've been there about 3 weeks, and we finished up in Sedgefield. And I thought myself, I knew the commanding officer, R.B.Y. Simpson. And he said, right, nobody buggering off for sly weekends and that. I was there about 3 weeks, and then we got demobbed. Went to York and got demobbed, and that was it. And, anyway, if you want a bit more, like,
yeah.
You know.
Well, yes, well, that takes us up to the end of your service, but yeah. Just one or two things. You said that you took charge of the NAFI at Bransford. What exactly, were those similar to your cook duties that you'd had before?
Oh, no. I was responsible for the cleanliness of the place, mainly, and, keeping more or less order. A little incident, if you want a little incident, being in charge of the NAFI. After Kos, what was left of the 1st Battalion, regulars I'm talking about now, were sent home, and they all came to Bransford. There wasn't many of them, maybe 15. So it was dinner time, and this nappy lass come running up to me. She said, here. I said, what? She said, that lot in there, there was about 14 of them in the wet canteen, as we called it. I said, well, what's wrong? She said, well, they keep coming up here and getting crates of brown ale. I said, I don't mind giving them, you know, a bottle of peas. I looked at her. I said, what? Oh, I said, look, it's 12:30. I said, I'll be back at 1 o'clock and I'll pull them shutters down. I said, if they want crates of brown ale, give them crates of brown ale. And when I went back, pulled the shutter down, here, you better have a bottle. So we finished up there, and next thing I knew, the CO walked in. McBean, was it? Yeah. Pulled him to attention, but there was another colonel with him. And this bloke was out of Somerset. He looked round, he said, oh, you're the lot that's just come back from the Middle East, aren't you? Yeah. said, enjoy yourselves while you can. I said, you take my tip. Well, that was just before D-Day, you know. Half a dozen have got killed at D-Day. You know, they spread them out among the Germans. The other thing was, they were going to post some of them, the Jug of Wellingtons. One where Oliver, he'd got the DCM in Tobruk. He said, you were not sending me to no bloody Jug of Wellingtons. This to McBain, right? He said, I've done 15 years in the Germans. He said, I'm going nowhere else. And, he said, well, look, you could stick that up your bloody ass, so stay down. But anyway, they switched it. They sent them to 5th, 6th, and Durham battalions. Oh, there was hell on. I mean, they were all regular soldiers, these blokes. And they said, no chance. So we'll go absent first. And, of course, left him. And he knew himself, what was going on. He felt like it. So... Yeah,
when you went as warden to the range, what were your duties there?
Well, just to get the targets ready, the targets ready and patch them up and all the rest of it, open it up for the, they would send and say, right, so-and-so will be at such and such a time. See?
Did you have some kind of accommodation on the range?
Had a hood, had a hood behind it. It was a quarry. Any bullet, they'd have to go a hell of a height to go over the top. It's a spinning mower, really. Where spinning wheel waterboard is. Well, anyway, they had a hut there. I used to be in there all day till maybe 4 o'clock at night. You knew when they were coming. And that's all it was. You keep the targets in good repair. Get the targets out, you see. Put them in the domes for them. It was a cushy job.
And when you were at the golf course, you said it was something to do with the demobilisation, did you?
Yeah, we were just waiting for demob, you see, and these current affairs, that's what it was. The
talks and lectures, that kind of thing.
Well, they didn't give me many lectures, but they used to dish books, obviously, current affairs, what you'd do after the war and all this sort of thing. Anyway, I don't know. But that's,
what date were you demobbed on? Can you recall the date?
November. No, when you see, I had like 3 months leave, so it went into 46, February something 46. Through the time, coming out from York, his civvies, mine was smashing. Whoever thought that out?
Yes, what happened at York when you went there? Exactly what was the process of demobilisation?
Whoever thought this demobilisation, in the First World War, they just shot everybody out. This time they sent you out in age and service. So they meant instead of you getting a million blokes coming, you only got, say, 5,000 every week. So gradually they absorbed them in, you see. And I thought, whoever thought that out, he must have been brainy. You went to York, you handed your uniform in, and you went and you got kitted out with everything in civvies. Suit, shoes, socks, underwear. A shirt, hat, come out brand new.
Someone told me that...
They were really good stuff.
Someone told me that there was spivs outside waiting to buy them.
Well, they would do, yeah.
You didn't see that?
Oh, that wouldn't have bothered me. They wouldn't have got mine. Oh, no.
Did you have a medical when you were demobbed?
Yeah. Had a medical up at, was it Sedgefield or somewhere? Oh, bugger tried to twist us and all, they're more. Oh, he said, you were all right. Now I'll put you down A1. I said, I'm B7 on me doings. So he put it down in B7, which brings me to, afterwards. So when you got your demob discharge book, on the back it was, if you think you're entitled to a disabled pension, fill the form in, send it off. I don't know, well, it cost me now, send it off. I got 10% and never even went on the medical board. That's what puzzled me. So later on, we still up at the army. Also got a letter, where the hell was it from? Chelsea pensioners. They say with the act of so-and-so of 19 so-and-so, I forget the name now. I've been awarded a pension, but I would like to be recalled to the colours till I was 65. Well, I'm looking at this, I thought myself, They'll take me, whether if they want me, they'll take me, so I might as well have something out of it. And it was only about, I think, 12 and 6 a week. It's £13 odd now. I still get it. Eh? Well, they're classed out of reserve, you see, but I still get it. And they also can go into Chelsea Pences. Eh? So if she kicks the bucket, I can go into Chelsea Pences tomorrow.
Ah, yes, you've got that
facility. You know, I don't know whether, you know, like if you reach a stage where you need looking after, you know.
And you've kept in touch with the regiment, haven't you, over the years?
Oh, yes, I've gone to all the reunions. Lots of things that I disagree with them, like, you see, now we have an association branch here, which has only been on 2 years, 3 years. And to me, it started 30 years to 40 years too late. You see, I mean, there were a hell of a lot of lads from Hartlepool in the Devils. And, you know, there's only two of us here now. One of my mates died last year, just before Christmas. But the thing that annoys me about them, we had to deal with them, I had to deal with them 87. Now, the 1st Battalion went abroad in 1937. We were in Khartoum, we got cross-ported, I told you that. So us, the lads from the branch were going to go to the annual meeting, you know, up at Dedham. I said, I want to ask them up there if they're having anything special on for 50 year, which is, golden anniversary or something, of the 1st Battalion going abroad. They see who was left, you know. They said, oh, no. Eh? Now then, as I just told you, it was 50 year ago since we were, you know, war broke out. And yet they've got nothing special on for it.
This is at headquarters in Durham?
Yeah, the Durham. There's nothing...
Surprising.
The reunion day is the 11th, I think.
September.
Mm. I would have thought, you know... Of course, I mean, you've got these people now that weren't there. See what I mean?
That's right, there's not many veterans left,
when Humphreys finished... Eh? That's it. Ireland took over. Well, I didn't know Ireland. Whether he was in, you know, at the back end of the war or not, I don't know, you see. But I would have thought, like, 50 years, they would have made something special. More so the people that were in China. Because when you work it out, it was a hell of a long way to come home.
Looking back over your career, Mr. Bell, what was your worst moment? Can you recall your worst moment? Or a bad moment?
Worst moment? Well, I got wounded, obviously. I'll be honest with you, I panicked. I thought I'd lost my bloody leg. You know, I felt this thing hit us. And, you know, when you hit your thumb with a hammer, you don't feel, you know. I thought, Christ, my bloody leg's gone. And, you know, I put my hand down and I could still feel it. I sort of eased off then, you know, I thought myself that. But I still couldn't feel nothing. It's pretty surprising, the shock, you know, how long the shock takes to wear off. Apart from that, bad moment? No, I can't say. No.
Who was the best officer you served with, or served under?
The best officer. Well, I would say Luad, but he died. You know, he was on platoon commander, but he was a really nice chap.
This was the chap that died in
Tin Sin. And this is 50 years ago, you know. I mean, and after that, you see, I really never had much to do with officers. As I told you, you know, when I joined up 32, 33, he said to me, right, Sergeant Mess Waiter. Well, I was Sergeant Mess Waiter. Well, he didn't have nothing, you know, he didn't go on parades and all the rest of it, so he would excuse parades. Then when I went to India, I became a cook, so he really didn't... get to know officers. See, I was employed nearly all the time. And the funny thing, when I look back, the funny thing is, nearly all the bloody jobs I got, I was on my own. Whether they thought I was dependable or something like that, but I always seemed to get these little jobs out the road, you know.
About NCOs, who was the best NCO that you came into contact with?
Oh, well, I think Topper Brown was, you know, he was a sergeant major. But he was a good, you know... If you were all right, he was all right.
Was this pre-war? This was before the war, was it?
Right, before the war, yeah. Yeah, they made him an officer when we went to the Middle East. I think he finished up a major, I don't know. He was actually adjutant up the desert sometime, which normally was a regular officer's job, you see. Of course, we didn't have them, you see. That's it, like, I don't know what the hell went on, but we never seemed to have the same officers any length of time. Huh?
What about any NCO that you particularly disliked?
There was a couple, but not really, how can I put it? Not that I hated them. I wouldn't have shot them. I only